Hi, my name is John Merkhurst, and I'm here to talk to you about Nix Browser, which is our vision of the hacker's browser. So Nix is a new browser which allows you to take control of the internet and kind of engage with it on your own terms. To that extent, we've made Nix fully programmable, keyboard driven, and it has built-in Emacs and Vi bindings. So there's a lot of features in Nix, and I'm not going to be able to talk about all of them, but I would like to talk about some of the more recent ones that I find particularly interesting. So, the first one I have on my list here is called Auto Mode. And Auto Mode, as the name would suggest, is a mode that automatically enables modes. So, there are different modes to enable different functionalities in Nix. So, there's like a no image mode, there's a dark mode, there's a proxy mode, and we can selectively enable and disable these features on a per URL basis. What this means is that we've got extremely fine-grained privacy controls. Now, it's more intelligent than just matching a URL and enabling and disabling a mode. Actually, what it can do is it can match rules, URLs, and domains. So you can say any URL that's over 10 characters long, turn on proxy mode. Not sure why you might want to do that, but it's just an example. So you can program these modes, these enabling of these modes, or rather these auto mode rules by hand, or you can have auto mode learn from you, which I think is a little bit more interesting. So when you visit a particular page, so let's go ahead and open up a new tab where we view the Wikipedia page about salmon. So I visited a new page, and here in my kind of status area, you can see I've got a couple of modes enabled. I have web mode, certificate exception mode, Emacs mode, and the A with the ellipse thereafter is auto mode. It's just cut off. And that's fine. These are my default modes. Now, when I enable a new mode, auto mode's going to realize, hey, this is a new mode. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's go ahead and turn on dark mode. And it's going to say, wait a second, this mode was not enabled. It's not part of your default modes. And it's asking me, would you like to permanently enable dark mode for this URL? So I say, okay, sure, let's do it. And now it's going to ask me to confirm the URL. I do that. And now you can see that it's written its rules to my auto mode rules file. So we can go ahead and look at that file, which is local share nixed auto mode rules.lisp. Okay. And as you can see, there's a new entry here with salmon, and it includes my dark mode rule. So whenever I visit this page again, this Wikipedia page about salmon, it'll automatically enable dark mode. Here, prepended to the top of the auto mode rules file, is information for you to understand how these are written and how to edit them yourself. As you can see, we go to great lengths to make sure that there's transparency in what's actually going on, and things are editable by you as a user. So, let's move on to one of the next features that I'm pretty interested in, and that's Powerline. So, Powerline, if you're not familiar with it, is what I referred to earlier as the status area. So, here at the bottom of a window is something that is known in Emacs as a mode line and in Vi, and there's lots of variants of this sort of power line enabled for different command line programs, and yeah. Anyways, we made one for Nixt, and we tried to make it just like the other ones that exist for Vi and Emacs, and we tried to make it just as powerful. So just like this Emacs power line is completely configurable, so is the Nixt one. And of course, the default one is quite reasonable. We've got some navigation buttons, reload button, a button to execute commands, a button to see the current URL and to set the URL, and our list of open tabs or buffers, as we call them, and our modes. Okay, that's cool. But what if we wanted to customize it? Well, anything here can be changed. You could do all sorts of stuff. So let's say you're a Vi user. You can make it so when you're in Vi insert mode, this is red. Let's say you're very concerned about the status of your proxy. In fact, you could make it so that a chime is played by the status area when a proxy is disabled. It could be any sound that you want. So let's do a simple example. Let's say we want to know when the last time the URL here was updated. We have maybe a time-sensitive web page, and we want to be viewing up-to-date versions of that page at any time. So I wrote a little snippet here, and let's go ahead and insert it into our init file. And just so you know, an init file is short for initialization file, and this is where we can do all of our manual customization and configuration for Nixt on startup. It's complete. It's a complete Lisp environment, so you can do whatever you want to do in here. So in this case, I'm going to override the format load status function with our own. That's just going to show the current time. So let's go ahead and evaluate that. Okay, cool. Now I'm going to jump back into Nixt here on the right. I'm going to make a new. There we go. There's the date right there. Exact to the second. And if I visit something else, this function is going to get invoked again, and that's going to update. So if I now go to the Wikipedia page on parrots, perfect. So the last time that this status bar was updated was at 16:13:51, which I think is pretty cool to know. Let's say, you know, you want to know some time series data that's changing. When did I last refresh the page? There's your information. The whole point is that it's fully configurable to however you want, whatever you need, whatever works for you. So you might have seen the Lisp code and you might be a little bit intimidated. It might look quite complex. How do I start? But the good news is that we've tried to make things as beginner friendly as possible. So all of the data structures in Nixt are introspectable via the interface, and they're editable, and they can be edited via the GUI. So if I do describe, I have a couple of possibilities here. Let's go ahead and describe a class, because everything in Nixt is based on classes. And let's describe the buffer class. So here you can see all of the slots of the buffer class. And slots are what you might think of as properties in another programming language. So every instance of a buffer has all of these properties, and they're changeable on a per buffer basis. So what are the modes that are active? What are the default modes? Everything. Everything you're going to find in an object somewhere that can be configured here. So one thing we might wish to change is the link hints. In case you're not familiar, link hints are these letters that come up next to links that allow you to quickly jump to a link. So if I were to type in AAY, it's going to link me to subtropical. So subtropical is right here, and I can just go there without having to use the mouse. Anyways, different users prefer different things. You might prefer different set of letters due to the layout of your keyboard. No problem. So what we can do is we can try to figure out what we're looking for. So let's go to describe slot. And what describe slot will do is it'll look through all the class's attributes, and it'll try to help you find what you want. So we want to change the alphabet of the link hints. And so there's a hints alphabet slot of the buffer class here. We can click it, and we can see some information. There's a reasonable documentation, and then default value, and then an easy-to-use configure button that allows you to set your own value. So let's go ahead and configure it to use just the home row on the keyboard, or at least my specific keyboard. I'm not going to use the semicolon because I'd like it to be alphanumeric. Okay, now it says slot hints alphabet updated with, and then the new value here at the bottom of the screen. So if I go back to our parrot page, it will show us the old link hint letters. That's because this is an old object. We've only updated the prototype for new objects. So I need to make a new buffer. This time, just to differentiate, I'm going to make it on dolphins. Hopefully it results in the animal. And okay, there we go. So now I can go ahead and type in the link hint shortcut. And now it's using only my home row letters. So this could be quicker for you. I mean, it's up to you. The whole point is it's entirely up to you. So the next thing I would like to touch on is data analysis. So the internet is full of a lot of data. There's a lot of information being published all the time on the internet. And to process it as a human is incredibly difficult because it's simply not possible for you to read everything published on the internet and to understand it. And the whole problem is we have these boxes sitting right next to us that are just really good at that, right? They're good for data analysis. So why don't we utilize the computer to help us a little bit? And we do that actually next, and we've come up with a couple of functions. They're still kind of, rough around the edges, but we're working on them. And these are designed to help you process data. For example, you could get a summary of a buffer, or you could get the keywords from a buffer. You can do all sorts of text analysis, statistical analysis, and try to come up with information. A cool application of that is in our reduce to buffer command. So the reduce to buffer command is a command that will take a set of buffers, close them, and put them into a list. So let's go ahead and demonstrate that. It'll be a little bit simpler. So let's open up a couple of buffers here. Okay, family of birds. We can open up this, should be about cockatoos. We can open up this, another different type of animal. Yeah, that's probably enough. Thick-billed parrot, why not? And green parakeet. Okay, so now we can invoke our reduce to buffer command. So we've got a couple of buffers here about different types of birds, and maybe we want to save them to view them at a later time, or maybe we want to send them to a colleague. So we can go to reduce to buffer, and we can select all of our bird-related buffers. Okay, so I've selected them. Now what it's going to do is it's going to close them and try to come up with a summary. And it doesn't always do the best job, but it does the best that it can. It's quite enough, it's enough. Quite often enough, it's actually quite enough. Sorry, it's a bit of a tongue twister. So you have some little information, automatically generated summary, and you could print this, you could save it, send it to a colleague, use it for yourself, however you want. So, what's next? There's a lot of really exciting stuff coming up. We're really excited for our 2.0 release coming up, and there's some really cool features that are going to be landing in it. The first one I'd like to go into is the global history tree. So we already have a single history tree, and what that is if you think about it, the navigation of the page is a tree. So if I click some link, I go back, and then I click another link, I've actually made a tree. I started from one place and went to two different places. It's not a linear history. And I can see that if I do a buffer history tree. Okay? I started from parent and I went to a couple of different pages. That makes a lot of sense. However, it doesn't account for the fact that if you think about it, when you go from buffer to buffer, it's also kind of a tree-like action. When I spawn a new buffer from a buffer, I've also created a new branch. So this is where global history tree comes in. I've got a screenshot here. So this hasn't landed on our main branch yet, but it will soon. So these symbols that you see here, these glyphs, they're unique per buffer, and they actually represent a buffer. And here's the total tree. So we started on the long rectangle start page, and then we made a tall rectangle page. And if we were on this exoskeleton page, we could go back and find exactly where we were. This means no longer getting lost. It's a common issue where you're on a page, right? You're looking at lobsters, perhaps. I don't know why, but you're looking at lobsters. And you go back, you go back, you go back, and you can't find what you're looking for. Ah, that's the problem. It actually wasn't another tab. Well, we kind of make this idea transparent, and it doesn't really matter which tab or what buffer a particular page was on. You can still get there. And that's the really cool thing. It's a really new paradigm, so I'd be quite interested to see how people use it and how you could use it too. So the next thing I would like to talk about is a prompt buffer. You might have seen this area here at the bottom come up several times. This is the input area. This is what we are calling the prompt buffer. And there's a lot of changes that we're implementing. It currently, it supports fuzzy matching, multiple selection, as you saw when I was selecting multiple buffers to reduce. I can open up many links at a time, whatever. However, we're quite excited because we think we've developed, or at least we've developed our own vision of what we think the most powerful version of this could be. So multi-source, what does that mean? That means instead of just setting the URL from the current history, I could set the URL from the bookmarks, I could set the URL from the open buffers, all at the same time. You're looking for a snippet of data, something, but you don't know where it is. No problem. Collate, compose all of your sources into one thing, and search them simultaneously. And you can do this by yourself, interactively. We don't have to think of whatever sources in advance, all sources that could exist. You can dynamically add sources. The next really cool thing I would like to talk about is multi-column. So typically, and in our case right now, currently, we have a single column. So when you try to set the URL, there's just one column. But there's more data associated with this URL. There's a title, there's the date that we accessed it, maybe the location that we accessed it, who knows? There's tons of information available. These pieces of information can be expressed as columns. So we could have the URL, then we could have the title, then we could have the date of access, whatever. And the cool thing is, as we enable and disable columns, which we can do dynamically, interactively, those will be used to filter and not filter the data. So we can decide, I want to set the URL based on the title only. No problem. Remove all the columns but the title and search the titles, or the title and the date, whatever you want. Finally, the other really wow feature coming up with our new prompt buffer is, as you traverse the results, we have the follow mode interactivity. It's a follow function. So as an example, when you switch buffer right here, it would show a preview of the buffer as you're going through the elements. So it would show the salmon page, it would show our home page, it would show the help page, and so on and so forth. So we're quite excited about that, and we think it's going to really change how things are done. These two new features are going to be hopefully pretty mind-bending. So we hope you enjoyed our vision of the future. We're quite friendly. We're open to any kind of feedback, and we'd love to chat. We're always looking for new ideas, trying to help people get involved, collaborate. So you can check out our homepage, where you can read a whole bunch of articles discussing many of the things I've talked about today. You can check out our GitHub, of course, leave issues, feature suggestions, bugs, whatever you want. And we're also online on Freenode on the Nick channel. So we hope you come talk with us, chat with us, and we look forward to working together. Thanks so much for your time. Bye-bye.